You're listening to the Cannabis Investing Network. Before we begin, a short disclaimer. The full disclaimer follows at the end of this episode. This podcast is a general communication and is being provided for entertainment and information purposes only. It is educational in nature and is not designed to be a recommendation for any specific investment strategy, plan, feature, or other purpose. Please enjoy responsibly. Hello and welcome back to the Cannabis Investing Network podcast. My name is Manish, and one last time for 2023, here we go, joining us, the one and only, the newest homeowner in Toronto. His name is Abby.
You got it. You got it, buddy. Finally own a piece of this rock.
You can go from being stock portfolio poor to being cash poor.
And house poor, so just poor in general. If you see me at the corner of Bloor and Young shaking a tin cup, you know, throw a dime or a quarter in there.
Help a brother out, you know?
Help a brother out.
Help a brother out. I mean, if that's not the most appropriate way to start this podcast at the end of 2023, I don't know what is.
You got it, man. Helping brothers out. That's what we do.
What a year it has been, ladies and gentlemen. The agenda for today, we have a really packed episode. We're going to be recapping the year, but really the purpose of recapping it is to talk about the game plan in 2024. And I want to say, after what has been a very rocky year for cannabis investing, I actually feel like there is a good investment thesis going into 2024 with some caveats and with a very narrow focused plan on how to execute in the new year and how to take advantage of the opportunity that's ahead of us. So with that being said, on the agenda today, we're going to be talking about what happened this year, what happened with cannabis, what happened with the overall economy, where we are today, what we think is going to happen going forward, different perspectives, what some risk factors are, and you know what the good and bad news is for the cannabis industry in 2024 and the game plan to execute on it. So to start the year in review, Abby, this was a very wild 2023 for cannabis. If you remember, it started, I mean, the start of the year was really marked by this whole will they, won't they in December, and it looked like safe banking was going to happen, and then it just all fell off a cliff. And I was kind of revisiting the charts just to kind of keep myself, apprise myself of what was going on. And it was very painful to see the steep drop-off that happened in December of 2022. And just as a reminder, I suppose it went from, you know, something like $10 to $12 US to like $7 very, very quickly.
Well, you got to remember, right? Q4 2022, especially leading into December, we had that little rally last year, right? Where, mm-hmm. I can't remember. I think it was, you know, safe passing is probably what the catalyst was at the time. And
the idea of safe passing,
you got right. It. Yeah.
Exactly. When was that?
That was in around December 2022.
Yeah, exactly. For sure. That was what got everybody excited. Right?
Yeah. The last rally. I remember someone calling me and saying, you should be buying MSOX.
That sounds like me. Yeah. I remember getting burned pretty good on that one. Well,
sorry. Yeah. I was going to say, you know, 2023 has been a very, very, very exciting year. It's been a volatile year. You know, it's not just cannabis. It affected the whole broader market. So, you know, we weren't the only people at the casino who was losing money. There was other people with us sharing our pain.
That's right.
But no, this is a great kickoff. So, yeah, I'll leave it back to you.
So look, I mean, just to go on what you're saying there, it's in December of 22, like, it's important to remember there was a lot of negativity, but cannabis sort of had this safe driven catalyst that was pushing it up at a time when the markets were really getting beat up. And at the end of 22, there was a tremendous amount of negativity. And I know, because I was one of the people who said, look, rates are going up. People have not priced in the reality of higher rates. The economy has been on a tear, but it's going to be, you know, we're going to hit a wall. And looking forward to 2023, there was a lot of fear of people are not prepared for the pain that's coming. And so, you know, the end of 22 was really bad across, you know, kind of the markets in general. And cannabis was particularly bad just because you had the rug pull of safe banking not happening. So going into 23, however, you know, started off the year with a lot of fear. And yet it kind of went the opposite way. You know, the economy held up really well. Spending held up really well. Bond yields fell. Tech rallied. Then, you know, the broader market rallied. And the only thing that really didn't rally was cannabis, right? I mean, it was kind of an amazing feat where everything else slowly started to recover and inflate. But cannabis was just really left for dead. And it was a very dark time for cannabis, I would say, Q1 and Q2 of last year, because everything else seemed to be gaining some steam and gaining some traction. And cannabis didn't. That's the capital market side. The companies themselves were not in great shape either, right? They were having misses. They were having down quarters. And you could tell that the markets were contracting and that the companies, you know, were having difficulty refinancing their debt. There was all these overhangs to these companies that really did not look good kind of the first half of 2023.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. One other thing I want to point out. Sorry, go ahead, Abby.
Oh, no. I was just going to sort of reiterate sort of the sentiment that was going on that I noticed, right? During that whole time, especially during Q1, like it was, we were starting to see positive sentiment sort of come in through on the cannabis side. And then when everything else was rallying and having that most recent rug pull, like it was emotional, man. It was tough. It was tough to deal with at the time.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people just tapped out, right? You saw a lot of, you know, when people are buying, they're very loud. You know, they put laser eyes or hashtag MSO gang. People sell very quietly, right? It's not a proud moment. It's a very shameful moment. And just basic human psychology, people do not like to feel bad. And when people really kind of put their name on something and it becomes part of their identity, you know, I'm part of the MSO gang and it doesn't work out, you feel very stupid and you just want to pretend like it never happened. And I think we've all lived through that experience in this industry, right? So one thing that we didn't touch on is in March of 2023, kind of the end of March, early April, we had Silicon Valley Bank collapse. And for the bears out there, myself included, this was a really pivotal moment of saying, look, see, things are breaking. Things that we didn't see coming are falling apart. And uncertainty and contagion spread very quickly. And for a very short amount of time, we had a lot of heightened fear. But what's amazing looking back on it is how quickly this fear was contained, really surgically contained by the Fed. And the contagion got put back in the box very quickly. And looking back on it now, I mean, we were just chatting before this and looking through the notes and you were like, oh yeah, Silicon Valley Bank. I even forgot that happened, right? It's like such a footnote in 2023.
Oh yeah. And during the time, it was like the world was ending.
Yeah. And what happens in those times is not that, okay, this esoteric bank in California is having issues. It's like, okay, what's next?
Right. And then what was after that was, I think it was First Majestic, right?
First something.
First, yeah. Republic, maybe. Yeah.
In, yeah, New York. That sounds, yeah, about right. And I actually looked up, there's a regional bank ETF I looked at just to check, and it was trading around $60 in February. It fell to the 40s and then to the 30s at the sort of the low point was only for about a week. Then it shot right back up. And today it's kind of close to $50. So not quite where it was in the panic of March, but you know, not as high as it was before that either. So it just goes to show you that most of these problem areas have recovered pretty nicely. And the SVB one, I think, is a great example of the fact that we are in a market where I think most, like, you know, if you're to look at sort of fear and greed, we're definitely leading we definitely don't seem to be on the fear side of the equation, which is pretty amazing when you think about how fearful people were the second half of 22 coming into 2023. Mm-hmm. So, and I think, Abby, just to put that in context, you were also chatting about, you know, money managers and kind of what you've been hearing from money managers in terms of what they're hearing from their investors.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, going, let's go back to March 2023, right? So when I was talking to a lot of money managers back then, in Canada, March is a very significant month because we have what's called our RSP deadline contributions, right? So basically you can contribute to a retirement account that allows you to offset some of your taxes, right? And usually what happens during that time is these portfolio managers, you know, they get a lot of cash, their funds close, they do whatever, because there's a lot of cash that's entering the market, and they typically put that money to work, right? They buy whatever, some sort of equity, some sort of bond, etc. In March, they were all buying money market instruments because this was the first time you were seeing yields. I think money market was paying, I don't know, 4 or 5%, something that was a lot higher than it was a year ago, right? Mm-hmm. And that, so that kind of signaled that, okay, these guys are bearish and they're staying in cash, right? Mm-hmm. But you can only do that for so long, and not, and you know, funds, there's no really like a set date where a fund has to report its holdings, right? So each fund is kind of unique, and some will do it every quarter, some will do it every month, et cetera. When money managers start showing, you know, quarter over quarter fund performance, and you look at their portfolio breakdown, you start seeing cash balances increase over and over and over again. You know, if you're a savvy investor who's watching this portfolio manager, you're going to call them and be like, hey, why is your cash balance going from 8% to 15% in a quarter, mm-hmm. right? Because I can just go buy GICs. I don't need to pay you a management fee for that.
Right. Why am I paying you, you know, 1% or whatever it is to just hold cash for me? I can do that on my own.
Exactly. And then it gets even worse when you dive a little bit deeper into some of these funds. This isn't all funds, but some of these funds where their cash balances were generating a higher return than their actual invested investments, right? Than the investment portion of the portfolio.
Yeah. Look, to your point, investors don't like to see money sitting there doing nothing, but they don't like to see losses either, right?
Exactly.
So in 22, when people are losing money hand over fist, suddenly holding cash, not so bad. You're not going to get fired for it.
Right.
But in 23, you're holding cash, you're bearish, but suddenly the NASDAQ is rallying like crazy.
Exactly. Right?
And so people are like, wait, what the hell? Like, I took the hits last year and I'm missing the rally because you're sitting in cash. What are you doing?
Exactly. And then so what, you know, the most logical thing to do is that people start redeeming their funds. So a lot of PMs were like, okay, well, we don't want that to happen, right? Because, mm-hmm. you know, you obviously want to leave with a professional manager. And so it didn't matter if they were bullish or bearish, they had to put their money to work.
Totally.
Right. And most people were putting money to work in names they already held. So they were picking up names that they had done research in. They were like, hey, I like this stock at $10. I love it at $8. And I think it'll do fine. So they're picking that up. Right. So it was kind of a weird scenario where you were seeing where, you know, there were transactions occurring. Money was moving, but it was all during the secondary market. There weren't that many private placements. There wasn't that many capital like primary offerings for this year. And you were seeing, you couldn't put a new idea in front of these guys and say, hey, like, have you heard of, you know, ABC stock? They'd be like, you know what? I'm going to continue to buy DEF. I've been buying this for a long time, and this is a much better name for me, right?
Okay. So what you're saying there is a really interesting point. I want to make sure people get that. As fear starts to subside, it's not like people just open up and just pour the money into the market, right? What they do is they go, okay, we're going to put this into things we already know that are maybe a little bit cheaper and, you know, get our cost base lower. So like they talk about the Magnificent Seven, the biggest tech companies, right? Apple, Google, you know, Facebook, things like that. Although Facebook was a little bit off in early 23, but people go, look, I know Apple's not going anywhere, right? One of the largest company in the world, more or less. Mm-hmm. I know it's solid. I'm going to put money there. It's better than putting it in cash. And I'm hedging myself because I know this company's, you know, not going to go down 20% tomorrow, right? Unless the world's ending.
Right. Right.
But it's where we are at the far end of the risk spectrum, right? It's not that things get a little bit better and people go, okay, what cannabis penny stock are we buying tomorrow? Right.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not the time for new big ideas.
No, exactly. And if somebody does look at cannabis, you better believe they're going to look at the top four first. And then after that, then they might start. I forget, you used to have a really great line, and it was like, you don't have to play in the mud anymore, or you can stay down the middle. I can't remember what it was. Do you remember what it was?
Well, it's something about basically when, like in this example, if someone's going to play, they're going to go right down the middle as opposed to getting in the mud and playing on the edges.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And we're so far on the edges that there's no mud there. It's just concrete.
No, it's all mud.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like it's all mud where we are. Yeah. So, okay, I think it's a good kind of pin in that part of the year. So basically first half of the year, fear, but then fear subsiding slowly, people kind of poking their heads out. I can tell you from the real estate perspective, entered the year thinking this is going to be a really tough year. It started to be able to get stuff done, started to see transactions happening, rates coming down, people saying, okay, we want to make a move. So actually, you know, at the end of the first half of the year, it was like, hey, this is shaping up to be a pretty good year, right? But you're always waiting for the other shoe to drop. Again, going back to cannabis was not getting any of this love. So MSOS was $10 to $12 in December. It falls to something like $6 to $7 in January. So pretty steep fall off, right? Pretty massive drop of almost 50%. And post SVB, it was still in the, $5 range. So when you look at the drop off from December to Jan, and then Jan to April, August, it was kind of a slow bleed, right? So it wasn't like a lot of other things that started to recover. Cannabis was looking pretty bad up until Q3, up until the HHS announcement, which dropped kind of out of nowhere at the end of August, mm-hmm. right? But leading up to it, we were doing episodes saying, hey, there's some interesting things going on in cannabis right now. The cannabis companies are posting actually some pretty decent earnings because they were starting to see some rationalization of expenses, some bottoming of cannabis prices. And overall, they were doing a little bit better than we had expected. So that was kind of combining to say, hey, there's some interesting things here. But the biggest thing was that the prices had come down quite a bit. So you had companies that were now trading, like the big companies that were trading at 4 to 6 times EBITDA. And that was very positive, right? The hard part was that you don't know when the market is going to start appreciating the EBITDA these companies are trading at. Right. And some of the smaller companies like an Air and Ascend were like more like 3 times EBITDA. Right. And now you had more questions around capital structure, et cetera. Now, mm-hmm. post HHS, the prices have, have almost doubled. So you went from something like $5 on MSOS to roughly 8 to 9. It came back, but it's really holding in around 7-ish. So you're up 50%, broadly speaking. Overall on some of the largest companies, more so in other instances, but you're up, a pretty healthy amount from where we were kind of in that Q2-ish range of earlier this year. So despite the fact that volume has gone back to pre-HHS levels, and despite the fact that, people are not as excited as they were in September, prices have actually held in pretty well. And I think that's a pretty surprising development to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think this whole year has been just a surprising year. Like everything has always pointed to the contrary. And somehow, there's been resistance where there shouldn't have been, right? And you're 100% right on that.
Well, I think just taking a step back, right, and talking about 23 for cannabis, like we kind of went through phases of people being like, look, this doesn't matter. Nobody cares about this. Like, leave these things alone, to suddenly seeing that when, the catalyst hits, it's very hard to catch up if you're behind the eight ball, right? And it's very hard to know how much to chase these things. And of course, the rescheduling bled very beautifully into the Senate coming back and SAFE banking being on the docket, right? So where we were kind of conditioned to think that, hey, this news comes, you get a pop, and then, it fades away, it actually had legs because of that, right? So I think one of the big things in our industry to keep in mind is that the short covering can be very strong and it can go on for some time if there are the right conditions associated with it. So if you have a catalyst that has some possible follow through, the short covering can be very violent. It can be extended. It can have some very significant moves. And of course, as things snowball, you start to get more attention coming in on the sector. So we saw attention from Wall Street Bets. We saw attention from, you know, media coverage. We saw a tremendous amount of attention from people who had been in the sector before and were coming back to the sector. The hard part of that catalyst-driven move is that it's not fundamentally driven, right? It's hard to look at a stock and say, okay, it was trading at 4x EBITDA. Now it's at 8x EBITDA because it's doubled. Therefore, I should sell. You know, it's really difficult to decide where and when to pull the trigger on these things because the rally is not driven by the fundamentals. It's driven by, you know, all of the technical things that are happening around it. Right. And I think this is really important because when we think about 2024 and the opportunity that's ahead of us, the opportunity really will be more catalyst and technically driven than fundamentally driven. So that's going to be, looking forward, the really hard thing about 2024 is having some kind of game plan and deciding on how to maneuver when things aren't going to be necessarily tied to logic and numbers, right? They're going to be tied more to emotion and the push and pull of you know, buying and selling and media and short covering and all the things that go into, you know, what moves the stock.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't think cannabis has ever been fundamentally driven. Very, very, very seldomly, you know? But I will say one thing. You're right on... when the catalysts do come, you know, you got to watch out for technicals. You got to watch out for price action. You're going to see a lot of enthusiasm and excitement kind of enter the space. But it does typically be it is usually the top four companies that kind of go up, right? So, you know, if you're buying, like, I don't know, a bottom tier like cannabis company, I don't know if they'll participate as meaningfully in these rallies, unless if you're buying MSOS, which is obviously an ETF. But I don't think this sector has ever been fundamentally driven.
Well, so I'll say two things. On the fundamentally driven, you're probably right. But when institutional capital has come in, it's typically on – they're looking at the fundamentals behind it to help rationalize an investment, right?
For sure. Yeah, when institutional capital comes in, there are companies who are doing billions of dollars in revenue, right? And there are companies who are losing hundreds of millions of dollars – annually too, right? So I fully agree with you on that.
Yeah, even I just mean some of the larger equity checks that have gone into offerings, they do pay attention to the numbers, but like I take your point, sometimes that's a secondary consideration and that's how they justify the investment as opposed to, you know, hey, something's happening, it's hot right now, we gotta go, right? And so just to go on what else you said, you know, when the market comes back, I actually disagree with you. I think that the top companies obviously get a lot of love and attention, but it's the smallest companies, like the left for dead ones. You know, I think 2023 was such a dramatic turnaround for AIR, where AIR went from being this sort of poster, like earlier I'm saying, you know, in the last run, you know, AIR was really a standout kind of name. When you look at 2023, AIR really probably had the best returns of any company. I mean, this is a company that was trading for sub a dollar a lot of the year. And from the lows, like I think it's probably tripled. So like, even where we are today, right? Like after giving back some of that pop. So although funny story, I was just Googling it while we're talking, and one of the top results is why is my AIR stock dropping in price? So, but look, when a company is left for dead, you know, talking about fundamentals, even people like me say, look, I don't care if the company is trading at 2 or 3x EBITDA. If I feel like the balance sheet has a hole in it and the company is going to fall apart, I can't touch it, right? It's too risky for me. But once there's some heat behind it again, suddenly go, hey, like, this could fix the balance sheet issues, right? Some of the things improve. Actually, off the bottom from April, so in and around the, you know, the SVB time, you're talking like, you know, roughly 4x, you know, 3.5, 4x where it was in April, right? So it's been a phenomenal run for anybody who ventured in and actually bought that stock down and, you know, sub a dollar.
Yeah, and I mean, there are other names like that too, but like Ascend, for example, has been getting a lot of love in the last little bit too.
That's right. Yeah, totally. And to be fair, and like to your point, I think those two names were sort of on the cusp where, they're not tiny names, but they weren't massive names either.
Yeah, I would say that those were more fundamentally driven names than like, I don't know, Canopy Growth, right?
Sure. Yeah, for sure. No question, right?
Yeah.
I guess my point in that was just that when we talk about big names, smaller names, sometimes when you're buying the bigger names, you know, when you're buying a GTI or a Verano today, you're paying some kind of premium for the comfort of the fact that these are larger cash flowing companies and, you know, you can sleep better at night not worrying that they're going to go broke, right? There's obviously some risk in every company, but there's less risk in those companies and you pay a premium for that, right?
Yeah,
but
exactly.
That being said, I think, you know, again, looking forward to 24, some of the best opportunities are in, you know, these sometimes special situations where name by name, you know, the negativity around a company has gotten, you know, too extreme and the company trades at too big of a discount. And you start saying, hey, like, this becomes interesting. If we get some heat, this name could really be a multi-bagger, right? And of course, there's risk associated with it. But you go, look, I'm going to pick a controlled amount of money to put into this thing so that if things go sideways, you know, I'm limiting my loss. But, you know, you can only lose what you put in. But if you feel like there's potential for a multi-bagger there, you know, the risk reward can be pretty favorable, right? Mm-hmm. So that's just one thing I want to talk about looking forward, because I actually think cannabis for 2024 is in a really interesting place. I think we have some really good catalyst event-driven opportunities that have asymmetric risk to the upside if you can put money in at the right price. And for the most part, the fact that cannabis is, you know, still kind of riding high off of the HHS announcement, I think we're in the territory of saying, yeah, like the prices aren't bad, but they're not great either. They're not screaming buys to me. And a lot of what happens next year generally is going to depend on what happens overall with the economy and the market. So just to talk about that for a second, right? This has kind of been something of a miracle market where in 23, you've had tighter capital. You've had higher yields. You've had people having to adjust to the fact that debt is more expensive. But what hasn't made sense to me is for how expensive money is, for how expensive debt is, equity has really not repriced that much, right? People who work in, you know, selling equity and raising capital will tell you that, you know, 22 and 23 have been really tough years, right? But that's true and not true. I mean, it's true in that risk assets, like trying to raise money for cannabis, has been basically impossible, right? I mean, that no one's making money doing that in 23, except for a very short window of time after rescheduling news hit, right? But if you think about how much the cost of debt increased in 1 year, equity overall really did not readjust that much. So going back to real estate, you know, people talk about the housing sector being very soft, but housing came off maybe 20%, maybe 30% from the peak, but the peak was very short-lived, right? The peak was really a frenzy fueled by having 0% interest rates for really too long. And house prices have still doubled from pre-COVID or more, depending on what market you're in. So we haven't had a huge adjustment. We haven't had, I think, really significant distress in most industries. And for how high yields are, I think asset pricing overall should be significantly lower than where we are today.
Yeah, and I would, you know, asset pricing, we always got to put a little caveat on that. It depends on what asset. And then, you know, totally. Specifically, I know you mentioned the real estate prices. As somebody who just recently I've done two real estate transactions.
Not a boy.
Which is, I guess, yeah, two more than I've, or three, yeah, never mind. I was going to make a joke. It was two more than I've ever done, but I had to buy the condo in the first place. Yeah,
that's right.
Swing and a miss. But no, so I mean, with real estate prices, for example, you know, if I can just sort of give my own little experience, headlines are showing that real estate prices are not collapsing, but are down, at least here in Canada. Mm-hmm. And they are, and they're down in certain markets, right? Like for those who don't know Canada, you know, Toronto is sort of the epicenter in Ontario, arguably all of Canada, but you know, Vancouver is also a really big, metropolitan area, and same with Montreal, right? Aside from that, I mean, you got Calgary, but in terms of density and population, it's quite sparse. Mm-hmm. Houses in the GTA are starting to come down a little bit, but if you're looking at very specific neighborhoods, they're not budging at all.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like in some cases, there's still bidding wars happening. In some cases, they're still selling above asking. And that's with, you know, mortgage qualification rates at being at like 6.5% to 7%. Right.
And a lot of what you'll hear from people is, well, you know, a 5% or 6% mortgage is not abnormal in history. In fact, it's probably a somewhat low rate over the course of time.
But right? Hold on. So this is, yeah. I love that you brought that point up, and maybe you were going to get this. So I don't mean to cut you off, but
no, go ahead.
You know, there's another podcast that I listen to, the Ron Butler Angry Mortgage Guy podcast. And he, mm-hmm. he actually talks about that, and he says, hey, listen, you know, you're right. Average on historically speaking, 5 to 8% for a mortgage is not like outlandish. However, though, mm-hmm. when your average house in the GTA is like almost $1.5 million at 8%, that is crazy.
Yes.
Because if you look at what the housing prices were when mortgage rates were around that level, they were like a fraction of what they are today.
Totally. And that's exactly it, right? It's people will say, hey, like these rates are not that crazy. They're normal. It's like, yeah, but the prices in relation to income are really high, and they've been set by 2 or 3% mortgage rates. And granted, you know, 7 or 8% is too high, but I don't feel like we've calibrated back to 5 or 6, right? Though when you look at what people are looking forward and thinking, they're saying, hey, the cost of debt is too high and it's going to come back in and we'll be fine. But what has me scratching my head is like, well, we're acting as if it's going to come back to being 2 or 3%, right? And I'm just not so sure. Could be 4 or 5%, right? Could be higher than we expect it to be is my point. In which case, I don't think things have repriced appropriately. So that's really the hard part to figure out going into next year. Because just to give you another real estate example that kind of had me thinking, I was at a retail building the other day, and a retail tenant is fully renovating a space to, you know, whatever, a new restaurant. And it's two units that have been combined into one. Somebody basically 20 years ago or whatever blew open a wall to connect two units. And this new person coming in, they're completely renovating the space. And when they, you know, open up the walls to do the renos, they noticed that that area that was opened up, the bricks towards the ceiling are sagging and there's cracks running through them. And the city inspector came, you know, as part of looking at it, made them open up all the drywall. And they said, hey, what happened here is that when this wall was opened up, somebody replaced the original or somebody put in a support using wood instead of steel. And you need steel and you need a proper footing in order to make this safe. Okay. So, you know, we were looking at it and trying to figure out like, how did this happen? When did it happen? Et cetera, et cetera. And what the best we could figure out, it happened a long time ago. Somebody did the work, you know, kind of cheap and dirty improperly. And, basically the, you know, the ceiling and the beams are not properly supported. And I was talking to the structural engineer. I said, well, you know, if this happened 20 years ago, like, you know, why did something not happen? Right. And he said, well, and he kind of pointed to the bricks and there's cracks in them. And he said, look, what happens is first you get a warning sign. That's the cracks forming. right? So that's the warning sign that something might happen. Then you get, you know, sort of loss of some structural integrity, which is the bricks starting to sag. Okay. He goes, but it could be that, like, at this stage of the game, you know, there's a second floor above this retail. He goes, whatever's above here probably just, you know, never, if they didn't, you know, let's say they put some new machinery up there or something, right? Then you could have an actual structural failure and, you know, a ceiling collapse or something like that happen, right? But it could be that the right or wrong conditions never actually happen. So we have this, you know, structural issue, we have the cracks, we have the sagging bricks, but if the wrong conditions never happen, maybe this just goes unnoticed forever and there's no problem. Right? So it was kind of that metaphor kind of sat with me for a while, and it made me really think about the economy and higher interest rates. And as we look around, there are definitely cracks. There are warning signs of fragility, right? And we see that in higher consumer debt. We see that in more companies going into receivership. We see that in, you know, people with variable rate mortgages, you know, having to work a second job. But when you look around, things feel pretty okay, right? Like, consumer spending is still strong. All of the things that we were really worried about, for the most part, have not happened. Rates are coming down again in the last 30 days. So you kind of look like you're hitting this beautiful soft landing nirvana where employment has not really budged at all. Inflation's coming down. And overall, the economy is pretty resilient. And maybe it's a case where we did see a lot of these cracks, but we kind of skate through it and no one ever overloads the second floor. So, hey, it's okay. The hard part about these situations is that if you see these warning signs and you freak out and you do something about it, and nothing ever happens, you kind of look like an idiot. But then if you see the warning signs and you do nothing about it and something bad does happen, you do have a catastrophic outcome, then you're really an idiot because you could have avoided them, right? So this is the hard part about investing, is that even though you see the warning signs, it doesn't necessarily mean that something really bad is going to happen, because we just don't know what will happen. So all we can really do is sort of look forward and try to plan the best we can and try to think through, hey, what are the different scenarios that might play out and how does that affect the sector that we're investing in?
Very well said. And, you know, I like your metaphor there. The other thing with investing is that you're always going to have all these other people telling you a bunch of different things, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. And everybody has their own agenda, obviously. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, I'm just looking at it from sort of this year and how I've seen it. I don't think I've made that many big equity investments this year because I kept feeling that, you know, something bad was going to happen. Rates were, like, we had high rates, inflation wasn't really coming down. Unemployment finally started to rise. In Canada is a little bit different than what's going on in the States, but, you know, we obviously watch the States a lot closer. Mm-hmm. And then you saw, like, sort of like, if you ever watch the precious metals markets, you saw gold sort of break 2000 and then it went to like 2100 at one point. And those are typically signs of like, hey, a recession is coming, right? And so, like, I've always been a little bit skittish, but if you look at just sort of like how well equities have done throughout the whole year, it's like, hey, look, you know, in using your example there with the retail space, it's just like the home inspector comes in and says, oh yeah, like, rip up all your drywall, that's you selling your stock, and then you realize, oh well, there was a metal beam, it was just one part where it started to sag, right?
Can you complete the metaphor for that?
Yeah. So sorry. What I basically meant to say was that, like, you could do every single thing right, but timing is just as important.
Right. Okay. Right? I got you. Yeah. So maybe you sell because you're, you know, panicking, right? And maybe that ends up,
or you think that there's, yeah, you sell thinking that, oh, I can rebuy back when things get repriced, right? But they don't. They just keep getting away from you.
Well, you don't know, I guess, is what we're getting at, right?
So absolutely.
What's helpful is to actually talk through these scenarios. So let's do that, right? And I think that relates to kind of how I'm thinking about cannabis going into 24. And to your point, Abby, actually, I think it's a great point. Like, I did not put a lot of new money into cannabis this year. right? For the most part, it was thinking, watching, and then suddenly, boom, the HHS announcement hits, and you're like, oh, I'm behind the eight ball now, right? And there's very little that I wanted to chase and invest in, except for, you know, one very small kind of name that I felt was undervalued and wouldn't move a lot, you know, in either direction, either way, right? So thinking about that going forward in 24, like the macro backdrop, very difficult to figure out, but just kind of looking at the two big narratives right now. So I think the big narrative that I'm seeing is the idea that, look, rates are done going up. Inflation is basically tamed, right? The genie's back in the bottle. So the worst of it is over. And that allows the Fed to start thinking about cutting rates into next year, at some point next year. Is that early next year, late next year? Who knows, right? We obviously have a election coming up. So, you know, that's an important consideration. And that's very important for cannabis as well, because everything's going to become political, which we'll touch on in a second. So I think just very simply, if rates are done going up and if everything's... So I guess it's probably easier to think about the downside scenario first, right? So if the cracks turn into breaks, then that's sort of the easier scenario to envision. Unemployment rises, incomes falls, assets fall. You know, we live through a real recession that I think most of us have probably never really seen. Asset values could reset. Cost of living could actually theoretically come down. We could see some deflation. We could see some slack in the labor market. And some more availability of labor with some, you know, wages moderating. And then it gives, you know, the Fed then has to respond by aggressively cutting rates.
Right? Yeah, keep in mind, like, when you're painting a picture with, like, stats like this, like, you don't want to live in that world. Like,
totally. Yeah, know? This is not a fun world to live in. Yeah.
It sounds great. I'm like, oh yeah, rates are going down. I'm going to make so much money. It's like, no. You might not even be in your house anymore.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. That's the kind of... You know, best time is to buy in the when there's blood in the streets, even if it's your own blood. Like that's the scenario we're painting right here, right? If if the cracks do get worse, then, you know, and if cracks turn into breaks, this is what happens, right? And then everyone's blaming the Fed for over tightening, and there's a lot of short term pain, because when this kind of scenario happens and money tightens up, there's not enough money to go around, right? So what this means is that, okay, you would have lower rates because yields would drop, but you would also have falling earnings as well. And companies would be, you know, dealing with falling earnings, lower sales, people tightening their belts really significantly. And cannabis would get hit by that too, right? When we had that last year, when customers have less money, they spend they still come to the dispensary, but they spend less money when they get to the dispensary.
Mm-hmm.
So, however, the asterisk there is that in that scenario, there could be some longer term advantages, like asset prices resetting, people having lower cost of living, companies, you know, not being so worried about wage inflation. And from an interest rate perspective, then rates probably actually come back down to, you know, something that we're more used to. And the Fed has to cut to save us. And, you know, longer term, you think, well, lower rates means, you know, assets can have these lower yields and it's okay. So you have more short-term pain, but maybe it's better for everybody long-term in this scenario. Okay. So that's the downside scenario. The scenario that you hear about a lot today is that it's kind of soft landing, right? So what I just described is hard landing. And then the opposite would be soft landing, which is basically where we are today, except inflation comes down a little bit more. And then, you know, the Fed says, look, I mean, inflation's down. I guess we can cut rates now, right? But, and this is what has people really excited on the bull side, by the way, is that if we wait until they cut rates, which could be Q2 or Q3 of 2024, then everything's going to go up again, right? They cut rates, it's a party again. Everyone's excited again. But let's just think about that. If the economy is doing well and it's resilient and it's chugging along at 2-3% inflation, which we're pretty close, then if they cut rates, they don't really have to cut a lot. I mean, what's the point of even cutting the rates, right? You've shown the economy can survive at these higher rates. So if you're pulling it back, you're not going to pull it back too far. So ultimately, you end up living with a higher for longer scenario where, you know, look, maybe mortgages aren't 7%. Maybe they're, you know, 5.5 or 6, but they don't need to come down super far if there's no recession to correct for.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's like, you know, I see your point. I don't think that, I don't know if you're alluding to this or not, but I don't think anyone's in the camp of rates going to zero anytime soon, right? Like, I think if there is going to be a rate cut, to your point, the economy has been quite resilient. I think we'll see it like, let's like Bank of Canada prime is what, 5.25 right now. Maybe it'll go down to like 4.5, right?
So that would be a pretty moderate cut is my point, right? So that would be like, so that basically the soft landing scenario says in the short term, things are pretty good, right? Things are okay. But in the long term, you're kind of stuck in this quagmire of now longer term higher rates, which is painful. Mm-hmm. And asset values are kind of stuck, right? Maybe they're priced okay, but they're not that attractive, right? Now, that being said, in those kind of scenarios, people need higher yield. Right? People want higher yield opportunities. So that might actually be kind of a sweeter spot for cannabis investing, where if things are kind of okay, but they're priced, then people start going down the risk curve maybe and saying, hey, what else is there, right? The economy's fine. We can start doing more venture. We can start, you know, the mud start looking a little more interesting in these kind of scenarios, right?
Yeah.
Whereas when you're having a hard landing, kind of more similar to what we were seeing in late 22, everything's on sale. Tech is on sale, right? And mm-hmm. tech becomes a lot more interesting than worrying about kind of cannabis penny stocks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So those are the two scenarios, right? And we'll talk about the cannabis catalyst in a second. But the good news is that what is going to help cannabis stocks for the most part is completely decoupled from economic performance. So I think it's important to understand and think about this because it's the backdrop with which, you know, investing will occur. But the cool thing is, I don't think what's going to move the needle into next year is, are the stocks trading at, you know, 4x EBITDA? Or are they trading at 6x EBITDA? Right? That's a big swing. That's 50%. But I don't think that's what's actually going to move the needle for investing in cannabis in 2024.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think what's going to move the needle is, what are the capital appetites? How scared are people? And how excited are people about the catalysts? So let's talk about the catalysts. So we'll go through them quickly here. You know, everyone knows what they are, but I think let's just talk about how likely they are in 24 and how impactful they would be in 2024. So first, and I think the least interesting, is safe banking. Safe banking, obviously, we've talked about it ad nauseum. Everyone's excited for it. We had a historic moment in 23 with it, you know, getting through a committee hearing. But it's looking increasingly unlikely that anything's actually going to happen with safe banking because of what's going on in the House. And on top of that, I just don't think it matters that much. You know, maybe it's credit cards. Maybe it's a little bit of signaling for the exchanges to get ready. But for the most part, it's symbolic. You know, the industry is mostly banked. If anything, it's just a stepping stone, right? I don't think it actually does that much. We've kind of put a lot of hopes into safe banking, but I actually think safe banking is of not that much importance going into 2024. And I think it's not that likely to actually get done. And I would love to be wrong on both of those things.
Yeah, and I will say one other thing for cannabis specifically. I mean, I don't know if lowering rates will it'll probably help cannabis. Obviously, it will. But I really think it's more catalyst specific, right? Like, I think specific catalysts to the sector are what's really going to drive price action.
Totally. That's going to be what moves the needle at the end of the day. But the backdrop, you know, I think is going to help determine what people will and won't put their money into, right? If tech is selling off like crazy and there's huge discounts in buying technology, it's going to be hard for cannabis to get any love.
Yeah, exactly.
Is my point. So next one is Cole Memo 2.0. This is a really interesting one. It could be extraordinarily impactful. Where I think it gets tricky for 2024 is that, remember, everything's political in 2024, which is good news in some ways for cannabis, because cannabis is a political football. And 24 is shaping up to be, you know, basically a repeat of 2020, but it's almost like 2020 on steroids. Like, it's going to be a very messy election. It's going to be a huge, you know, primary season. So the topic of cannabis is absolutely going to come up. I don't know when, I don't know where, I don't know how, but it's going to be something that is used to garner votes. That's a feather in the cap of rescheduling. That's what all my thesis on rescheduling is based off of, the fact that the Democrats are going to use it in order to drive votes for Joe Biden. But I don't know how the Cole Memo 2.0 plays into that. I think that the Cole Memo, what that would do is, it's basically a directive that, hey, we're not going to prosecute state legal businesses and people associated with them. So it could give some safe harbor and cover to exchanges if they want to make a move. But I have a hard time seeing how they do Cole Memo before they do rescheduling. You know, it seems like something that would come after, logically. But again, I don't know. I'm unclear on this one. It could be very impactful. I don't have high hopes that we're going to see it anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
The Florida ballot decision. This one is, I think, really, really cool because it has a hard deadline of April on it. We're going to know by April what the Florida Supreme Court says about allowing cannabis to be on the ballot. I am very pessimistic that the court is going to do everything they can to shelve this and not have it become an election issue. But, like, open-minded to totally being wrong here, it would be probably the most impactful fundamental thing that could happen to the industry. I would also caution, we need 60% at the ballot to win. And, you know, we didn't get there in Ohio, which was not a great sign. But that was also in an off election. It wasn't a real election, right? 2024 is going to be a very hotly contested election. So I think this is something that, you know, for a company like Trulieve, I mean, it's everything, right? But for other companies that have a Florida presence, you know, it's certainly a very, very big deal. And, you know, Florida just represents the ultimate limited license cannabis market, given, you know, the potential for adult use and tourism and stuff like that. So I think that is just a phenomenal catalyst to keep an eye on. Ohio legalizing in mid-2024. This is going to basically be a repeat of what Maryland was in 2023. A lot of the reason the last financials were so strong is because Maryland came on at the exact right time. And you saw the kind of trifecta of, you know, new market turning recreational, combined with, you know, existing operators being scaled, combined with launching right during the summer when you have really good sales volume. So you had high prices, high volume, good availability of supply, operators ready to go, and Maryland just blew the doors off the place, right? So when you look at 2024, that's Ohio's gonna you know, basically open their doors for adult use. There's some back and forth with the legislature in terms of what they're trying to do with it, but the good thing is, by default, Ohio will go rec in mid-2024, and that will be a great day for the industry, great for all the operators, great for all of the constituents in surrounding states who will put pressure on their politicians to get it legal. And the biggest catalyst, of course, for 2024 is rescheduling, right? Rescheduling is just phenomenal for the industry, takes away 280E, and, you know, potentially with the Cole memo could really unlock some possibilities in terms of uplisting. So this is, without a question, the biggest piece of the biggest catalyst on the table. I think clearly it's politically influenced. Clearly there's incentive to do this and get it done right before the election, so it's fresh on everybody's mind, and it drives voters to the polls, and the Democrats can say, look, we did something on cannabis, and, you know, it's not full legal cannabis, but we did something, and it's a big deal, and we should get credit for it. And that'll be the one that I think really moves the needle and gets people excited. So that's the one, obviously, that we're all hoping for and planning for. People, for some reason, believe that we're going to hear something on that very imminently. I don't know that that's true. I would be surprised if we heard something on it very soon. And I think that creates an opportunity here where if more fear enters the market or if people get disappointed about the fact that it's not happening, then there could really be an opportunity into next year to selectively add to your cannabis portfolio in anticipation for this significant catalyst coming in and around October of 2024. And even just leading up to October, I think you're going to see some cannabis debate here and there, especially as a market like Ohio, which is a swing state, legalizes in mid-2024. I think there are some nice political tailwinds that we can catch in 2024. And I think that could also be combined with some negativity earlier in the year if there's market turbulence and if people are disappointed by rescheduling not happening sooner.
And quick question for you. So where are we on the whole rescheduling thing? So HHS has come out and given that that statement. The DEA is reviewing it right now. Do you know like how long they have until they come back?
Well, that is a beautiful lead-in from our the episode we did with Ryan Mao at Solar Cannabis, when he laid out very nicely kind of the history and what's happened in the past and that kind of stuff. So basically we're waiting essentially for the next step. And there's a couple of different ways it could shake out. But I think he basically posited that the next step could be something like April, May timing if they want to give lots of time for kind of public commentary. So I think he said between February and April of 2024 to give a proposed rule, quote unquote, and there's lots of public commentary. And then the final rule, which is what I call the mic drop moment, would be in late October of 24. But again, he's sort of theorizing those dates based on the political windows.
Yeah. Right?
It could be that the proposed rule comes in October of 2024, and that's their big thing that they, you know, hang their hat on. Who knows, right?
Yeah. Cause I remember when it first happened, there was this whole thing of like, oh, the DA has like 90 days to respond.
Yeah. And I think that was misguided and that's come and gone now. Right.
Yeah.
So, now people are saying, well, it's coming any day now. We're going to see it any day. So again, I don't know where those are coming from. Anytime, you know, you sort of look up and you see the stocks are up, double digits, you sort of immediately look around and say, did I miss something? What happened? Right. But, that has not happened as of yet. We haven't seen anything that you can sink your teeth into that's come across yet, and I don't think we will, right, until we actually see the proposed rule. It's possible somebody might find out, you know, a little bit early, but as they I think they did last time in August, you know, there seemed to be a leak just right before it happened, but it's just impossible to say.
Nice. Okay. Gotcha. So there is one other catalyst that you missed, you know.
Hit me.
International cannabis, man.
It's
happening. It's a thing. It's going on. You know, Japan is apparently going to legalize medical cannabis.
Yeah. So look, I mean, there'll be plenty of time to chat about that next year, I think. Germany was a big letdown this year, in my opinion. You know,
has been a letdown for the last 5 years for cannabis, unfortunately.
Yeah, and it got a little exciting there, right? And yeah, it looked like something might happen. And then, you know, again, it's been delayed. It's been watered down. It's, you know, it's something that great. It's great to see progress of any kind, but it's not an investable thesis, in my opinion.
It's very true.
Okay, so we're getting to the end here. So I really want to talk about the bad news, the good news, and the game plan going into next year. So the bad news, I think cannabis earnings are just going to be okay going into 2024. So 2023, you had the benefit of lowered expectations. You had companies really doing a lot of belt tightening. And then you had Maryland really helping, and New Jersey, by the way, really helping to drive sales. So the bad news looking forward is I think New Jersey is going to start moderating. Still a great market, but I think you're going to see moderation into 24. Illinois is definitely seeing price compression. Remember that, you know, a lot of the big MSOs, with the exception of Trulieve, have a lot of revenue coming out of Illinois. And that market's actually held up really well. It's gotten more competitive, but I think you're starting to see that accelerate. And I think Forefront, I talked about last episode, Forefront's large grow that's coming online is really going to help flood the market. And they really have no choice, right? I mean, they have to sell all of their product to keep the lights on at this point. So I think that Illinois is at risk of seeing compressed prices, and that's going to weigh on earnings. And then Maryland, like I think Maryland is basically close to or at peak earnings, and you're going to add more stores. It's going to be strong, but my point is it's going to be hard to match the comparables of Q3 of this year. So I don't know if Q4 is going to be as good. I think Q1 could also be softer. That's going to be a challenge for earnings, you know, going into 24. And the stocks are not as cheap as they used to be. So it's not like they're trading at super juicy multiples. You know, they're trading at okay multiples, maybe decent multiples, but not amazing multiples like they were in 2023. Mm-hmm. Also, the macro environment, I think, is not looking that great, because in a hard landing scenario, capital is very tight. There'll be a lot of opportunities outside of cannabis. And from a fundamental perspective, consumers probably start to cut spending. They look for alternatives. Maybe that's downsizing cannabis. Maybe it's buying Delta 8, etc. But either way, it's not favorable to the fundamentals of the industry. In a soft landing scenario, you're higher for longer and you have less multiple upside. So investors might start looking to higher yielding opportunities, but I also think the debt plays might crowd out some of the equity. So there might be more appetite for higher yielding debt than there is for equity. So both scenarios are kind of, you know, have their own nuances of why they're not great. The soft landing scenario is probably better for cannabis stocks than the hard landing scenario.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is that the catalysts that we went through are earnings agnostic. So even if earnings are just okay, they're not great, we don't beat anymore, it doesn't really matter in the context of the catalyst that we're discussing, right? If rescheduling news hits, people don't care that much about, you know, the last earnings report. And for the most part, these companies have stabilized their balance sheet. So that's a good thing. The hard landing means that there's more of a sell-off environment, right? There's more fear around the markets and all stocks. So cannabis stocks get hit by that. What that means is that there's more upside opportunity when and if rescheduling news hits. So the kind of nuanced point in this is that you get a hard landing, you get a lot of fear, you probably get a lot of sell-off, you get people worried about cannabis stocks, you know, they're dumping their positions. But what that means ultimately, if you buy into the rescheduling catalyst, is that, you know, you can buy things cheaper, and when rescheduling hits, you know, you're getting more of a yield on it, more of an upside on it, right? So that could be a real opportunity in 2024. And the good news is everything's political. So cannabis is coming up. It had a strong showing in Ohio with, you know, 56-ish% of the vote. Wasn't 60 that we wanted, but especially if it's on the ballot in Florida and you have Ohio turning on, that means you have two of the largest swing states in the country where cannabis is going to be a news item. I think that has to be something that all of the political consultants keep an eye on. I think it has to be something the Democrats have to take advantage of. And I think that sets the stage for possibly some juicy catalysts, some momentum driven trades on cannabis to the, you know, middle end of 2024. So the sweetheart scenario, if I could paint it for you, would be you go into next year, people see that rescheduling isn't happening as fast as we thought. Okay, we have fears about the economy, things sell off, you know, the S&P gets hit, cannabis sells off, people have more fear, they say, this thing's not happening. you have a opportunity to selectively put some fresh capital in a controlled manner. Pick some names, a mix of large and small names. You know, maybe you at the top end, you know, you got your Verano and GTI, but on the low end, you've got some of the left for dead type opportunities, companies that, you know, people are really second guessing that still have some runway to them. You know, like last year, it would have been an Ascend, it would have been an Air. I've got my eye on Cansortium. You know, there's other opportunities maybe selectively like that, that you sprinkle in depending on where they're trading at. But you buy those things at a discount and then you wait and hold on for dear life and try not to get shaken out of the position. And you just hope and pray that we hit rescheduling later in the year. And that to me, in a nutshell, is the game plan that I'm hoping for in 2024. You could go a little crazier and try to do some optionality, some MSOS calls and stuff like that, some MSOX maybe. I think, again, controlled, very small part of the portfolio. I wouldn't bet the farm on that. But I think all of these, if there's a sell-off in the early half of the year, because the catalysts are election-driven, you have a clear target end date in sight. So that, to me, is how I'm thinking about the opportunity going into 2024, especially if there's an opportunity to buy a little bit cheaper in the face of some fear. So there it is. That's the game plan for 2024, Abby.
I like it, man. Sounds like a pretty exciting one. I mean, I'm in a little bit of a different camp right now, given that I'm poor. so my game plan is just make sure I can service my new mortgage.
Yeah, exactly. That's a fair point and a fair place to be.
Well, no. All joking aside, I mean, like, listen, I'm actually in the camp of that there. It might be not a soft landing, but not a hard landing, but somewhere in between. So I'm still pretty skeptical on the overall equity market.
Yeah, look, I mean, I'm definitely skeptical on the overall equity market. And I think it's a time to be a little bit cautious, which is at today's valuations, which are, you know, probably 50% above where they were before the HHS announcements. Mm-hmm. Announcement. I'm not jumping out of my chair to buy these things, right? I got plenty of exposure. You know, we're still down a ton. But I think what helps you in the figuring out, hey, when do I sell these things if they go up, is if you can, you know, swing trade a little bit, if you have some money and you can buy, you know, the lows of these things, and I shouldn't say the lows, you can buy the, you know, if these things pull back and you can buy, then that gives you some breathing room to sell on the way up and say, hey, I'm just managing my position. It's okay. I don't need to capture, you know, every dollar on these things. Right. So that it's like, it's the idea of being selective, finding the opportunity, limiting how much you're going to put in. But I definitely see how when a little bit of fear creeps into the market, which happened, by the way, in October, arguably there was some hedge fund selling and stuff like that. But these cannabis stocks really took a nosedive for a very brief amount of time before they bounced back in October-ish, I think end of October. So when fear hits the market and the VIX starts rising and people are worried, that definitely affects our sector. And there could be an opportunity, you know, if you have a not, you know, sub 1 year horizon to buy and cross your fingers and hope for the catalyst to hit, but realize that that is a gamble and you want to be selective and you want to be careful about how much money you're putting into it. Mm-hmm. So we will see. That is the game plan for 2024. That is the last episode for 2023. We will not have an episode after that because we're both going to be off and I'm going to be traveling on my long-awaited honeymoon because my wife has been very patient since we got married. And we're going to be joining you guys in the new year in January with a fresh executive interview that I think is going to be pretty interesting. But Abby, is there anything you want to leave people with for the end of the year?
No, I mean, like, listen, this was a very volatile year. It was an emotional roller coaster from a stock perspective. You know, I hope everyone goes into the holidays feeling chipper. And, you know, I am pretty ecstatic about 2024. And I hope you guys, you know, I hope it's a good year for all of us.
I hope we've been able to provide everyone with some value this year. We love your comments, feedback. What do you want to hear about in the new year? CINpodcast@gmail.com. Have a safe holiday, everyone, and until next time.
This podcast is a general communication and entertainment being provided for informational purposes only. It is educational in nature and not designed to be a recommendation for any specific investment product, strategy, plan, feature, or other purposes. Any examples used in this podcast are generic, hypothetical, and for entertainment purposes only. None of Cannabis Investing Network or its affiliates are suggesting that the listener or any other person take a specific course of action or any action at all. Communications such as this are not impartial and are provided in connection with advertising and marketing of products and services. Prior to making any investment or financial decisions, an investor should seek individualized advice from a personal financial, legal, tax, and other professional advisor that take into account all of the particular facts and circumstances for an investor's own situation. By listening to this communication, you agree with the intended purpose described earlier. Opinions and statements of financial market trends that are based on current market conditions constitute our judgment and are subject to change without notice. We believe the information provided here is reliable, but should not be assumed to be accurate or complete. The views and strategies described may not be suitable for all investors.